Hey, yo, say hello to the bad guy, Scott Hall.
Hey, this is Olympic gold medalist Kurt Angle from TNA. Oh, it's real. It's damn real.
Hi, this is Booker T, the five-time WCW champion. And you're listening to SNS Radio Network.
Yo, monkeys, it's me, TPP, the king of Bada Bing, the master of the diamond cutter, the three-time world champion. Stay tuned or you will feel bang!
Hey, you listen on the SNS Network, and that's the bottom line. Just don't go set go.
The world is listening.
Welcome, everybody, to this week's episode of SNS Sticks and Flicks with me, Ashley Richardson. And, yeah, that music tied into the gaming news, but also, well, I was going to say one of the games that I'm going to be playing, but I guess it sort of is, but sort of isn't. But I'll get to that. Yeah, EGX Talk will be coming up later, as will entertainment news and quite a lot of reviews, actually. But first up, gaming news, and it looks as if Tekken 7 will be getting a Japanese arcade version, or there'll be local testing, should I say, coming next month, which I'm, as a Tekken fan, it should be good to see whether the Japanese market likes the new additions and the adjustments that they're making, so I think it'll be a good shape there. There is a glitch on the Miiverse allowing unauthorized pictures to be posted. I'm not sure. I think it might be copyrighted stuff. I think there are also some relatively rude stuff, like people in bikinis. I don't think there's anything too drastic, but it's still a glitch. I think Nintendo have sorted it out by now, but certainly last week it was a thing that they were trying to hurriedly sort out. The official info has come from Evolution Studios regarding Drive Club. It will require a 17GB install, so therefore we'll need, and they've said, sorry as well, that 3.5GB will need to be downloaded at least before you'll be able to start, and the rest of the game will be able to download in the background. At least they're providing the info for how much space that it will take. And the fact that it's only 17 gig for how big it's supposed to be is, I'd say, somewhat surprising, I guess. I don't know. Little snag now regarding Super Smash Bros. The 3DS edition will be requiring the new model of the 3DS, which is set to arrive in the Western world probably, I wouldn't say holiday, I'd say more likely next year. The new model of the console will be required to run the Miiverse, as well as being able to post screenshots in-game, which is another case of, yeah, you're going to buy this new 3DS, aren't you? You're going to buy it. Buy it! In great hacking news, somebody has managed to hack a Canon printer so that it can play Doom. I think it was some sort of tech conference that was going on, and basically to show the vulnerability of practically anything and everything. And yeah, this Canon printer was running Doom. Canon came out in a statement saying that they're already trying to do some sort of patch, so it's harder for things like this to happen. But you know, there'll be some device out there that will be manipulated for other purposes at some point. This was just shown as some sort of experiment thing to basically show you not all devices are secure, which is a nice little thing, I will say. Of course, the big news is the purchase of Mojang by Microsoft is official for $2.5 billion, a little bit more than what was expected. Notch and the co-founders leaving, but this is where I have to respect Notch. He's basically put out a statement which crashed his site, so he had to put it on a pastebin thing. And basically, the statement said, "The reason why I'm leaving isn't about the money, it's about my sanity." Case in point, this whole Gamergate stuff and the social justice warrior stuff. Because you had all this Zoe Quinn and Anita Sarkeesian stuff. Apparently, actually we'll mention that in a minute. With all that stuff and the whole SJW social justice warrior and all that, the situation was that his name started getting brought up, and he didn't feel comfortable with that. He just felt that gamers should be gamers. They shouldn't be going at each other from behind their wicket, their white picket fences, should I say, if I can work out the way to say it properly. And he basically said, if this is the way that the industry is going to be now, what with the rise and rise of social media and the rise and rise of, you know, the negative side of social media, he didn't truly want to be a part of it, and he wanted somebody else to manage it. He's happy doing his own projects and launching his own stuff, because obviously he'll probably still have some sort of part in Mojang. You'll probably still be honorary person involved with the game. But yeah, him and the co-founders are departing. Microsoft have pretty much said that they're going to leave everything as is. There won't be any changes or adjustments to the Sony versions. It'll be patched as normal. By the looks of it, Microsoft, although they're running it, is letting Mojang be Mojang, at least for the time being. Somewhere down the line, I wouldn't be surprised if they suddenly went, "We need you to make this game." But yeah, that's the thing I love about Notch, with the open statement honestly saying what it is. He hasn't, you know, gone off in a hissy fit like Phil Fish or anything like that, and has been honest and basically saying all this demand and everybody wanting my opinion on everything, I just couldn't take it anymore, and I've left. It's relatively similar to Adam Sessler from his years in the games industry and everything. He, earlier this year, decided to leave. I think it was with Revision 3 at the time and their stuff, but he just left, pretty much left the industry as a whole. He still obviously puts thoughts generally on his social media and everything, but he certainly is enjoying the aspect of not being, I wouldn't say corporate, but basically just being his own man, which is the same Notch has done, and they've openly said that they wanted to get away from the craziness that is the industry as it is at the minute, because it probably is on a tenterhook. if we keep seeing consoles failing, we might be seeing another video game crash. Admittedly, we aren't at the minute, apart from possibly the Wii U, if you'd count that. I'd say possibly Xbox One's figures are under what they were expecting. PS4's might be over, but they're still making a heavy loss, apparently. So, I don't know. We'll see what happens there. NBA 2K15 has revealed that it will be including face scanning into the game, which makes people wonder, okay, you're doing that for NBA. Possibility for WWE somewhere down the line, possibly next year. Actually put yourself into the game. That would be a nice feature. And also, they're also introducing what-if challenges for the My Team stuff. So basically, your player will instead take the place of, let's say, Shaquille O'Neal or Kobe Bryant or LeBron James in the NBA championship game from 2 years ago, let's say. And how would you deal with the pressure like he did at the time? Basically, key moments will have your player involved, possibly alongside star players or in the place of star players, and just basically going, how are you going to cope with it? Which is a nice little feature. Sticking on the 2K front, obviously WWE 2K got delayed on next gen for a few weeks, the November 18th in America, November 21st in the UK. That does mean it's coming up against a lot of games now. I mean, the week before, you've got Halo, you've got Assassin's Creed. You've also got on that week, I think, Project Cars. You've got the Sonic games for the Wii U, although that isn't a like-for-like comparison. You've got Dragon Age Inquisition. You've got Far Cry. There's a lot of stuff now coming out. It looks like November is now the month of whoa. Previously, it's been October into November. Now it seems to be just November. It sort of starts with Call of Duty, but really those that 2 week gap is very heavily done. I think Little Big Planet 3 is out that week as well. It's a ridiculous list. Also regarding WWE 2K, the network apparently has got a roster reveal showing, by the looks of it, from the way the description is on the website, it looks as if it's just going to be what the presentation was that they did back with IGN last month around SummerSlam time. The big twist, though, is if you look on the network website, it lists the consoles and platforms that WWE 2K is on. And there is clearly PC box art. This would be huge because obviously this would be the first wrestling game on PC in quite a few years. Which in turn would also put pressure on all these other people making, I think Pro Wrestling X was trying to be get the game on Steam. Admittedly, it's a different approach because they're trying to be like No Mercy. But that game has been in and out of Kickstarters and crowdfunding and all that. If WWE 2K suddenly comes out on the PC, it's going to be like, people are going to gravitate to that. Especially if there is a modding, if modding is allowed. We know there's quite a bit of modding for GTA, but that's because it's a Rockstar product. Will 2K themselves be willing to let this go into the hands of the modders? Then again, people will probably hack it anyway, so I don't know. But yeah, possibly PC. So Bronx, you might be in luck, man. You might be in luck. Blizzard has announced that Hearthstone has had 20 million players playing since launch, which is pretty impressive, actually, for the kind of game that it is, and shows the appeal of card and deck building games. I mean, Supercard has been a relatively good success, I'd say. People seem to be liking it, especially a lot of people here on the network. So, yeah. EA has announced that they're dropping trade offers for FIFA 15. Basically, this is to curb coin trading. So, basically, you sell a very poor player, But in its place, you basically get a lot more coins than it's worth. It's basically trying to... it's trying to curb that, and so people are actually paying fair value for the characters for the part of the Ultimate Team mode, certainly, which I think is probably fair. Destiny last week launched its first big event, the Vault of Glass. The raid was put up. I think you had to be sort of minimum 23 to get in, and probably 26 was the optimum spot. And I think Destiny were thinking it would take a fair while. Within 10, well, the raid lasted 10 or 11 hours, and basically the team that did it managed to do it. Most of them, I think one was possibly 24, but the others were at the bare minimum of level 23. So that, I would say, is impressive, actually. So good job to those guys. Rovio has announced their new game, Selfie Slam, which is a comedy mini game collection for Apple platforms. The only positive thing there is it's not Angry Birds. the Super Smash Wii U model has been... Well, it's rumoured that Super Smash Wii U is coming out November 21st. You see, you know, more of those games. Dragon Age, Far Cry. WWE, I just mentioned that. The Ice Climbers, though, are officially out. The reason why, apparently, is due to the 3DS just not being able to cope, I guess, with two characters being one. Or something like that. There has also been reports that quite a lot of players have been innocently getting banned. What it is apparently Princess Peach has the ability, in one of her powers, to pick up a turnip and throw it at her opponents. Occasionally, however, rather than a turnip, she actually spawns an item that she can use. And Nintendo, I guess the system, immediately thought, okay, you're hacking the game, this is illegal, you're being banned. So quite a lot of people who were playing Peach did get banned. I think it's all been resolved now, but yeah, that was a major sort of faux pas there for Nintendo, I'd say. Terms of Tokyo Game Show stuff, let's have a quick look. The Metal Gear collection that was teased was actually a clothing range. They also showcased off a white PS4 for a special Metal Gear Solid Edition. iDroid phone covers for your Android or Apple platforms. And also in terms of gameplay, we had a quiet trailer. And Quiet looks really weird. She turns into like ember and ashes and can go anywhere. She's sort of a sub-matter being, which makes it even more intriguing as to who she is. I can't work out what they're saying because it's all in Japanese, but clearly she's possibly PTSD, because everyone is very wary of her, apart from Snake. And in the mission bit that they did show in the jungles, she came in handy as basically a secondary sniper. The demo also included deployable decoys, which in the demo was Lisa from PT, which I think was an epic little addition there, really, and just quite a lot of stuff. There was even the horse came in, and it was like, okay, this isn't horse territory. So you just threw the horse in the air with the balloons. And it went... It's a very good, very reminiscent of Snake Eater, I'd say, in terms of the graphics and the look. But looked impressive. You should go check it out yourself, the 20-minute gameplay. I think it's on various places on YouTube, but looks really nice, I'll say. Also... Final Fantasy Type Zero was officially confirmed, which I can't remember the whole idea of it, but the big thing was that it will include, at launch, when it comes out in Japan in March, I believe, it will include a demo for Final Fantasy 15, which also in turn confirmed for people that don't want Type Zero, there will be some sort of demo available, hopefully around March time. Which, considering it probably is one of the most anticipated Final Fantasies now for quite a while, considering how well it's looked and how impressive it seems and how we're trying to forget that 13 and 14 ever happened, we might be going good, certainly. I wouldn't say sad news, but some news certainly that is a shame. But then again, probably inevitable. John Murphy, quoted as being the guru of the European Pro Evolution Soccer arm, has left Konami after 16 years. He was there from 1998, I think it was, with, it probably would have been ISS Pro Evo 2 at the time. But certainly, he's overseen every single Pro Evolution Soccer, right from Pro Evolution Soccer 1, through the numbered versions, then through to the dated annual versions, right up to, I think he is going to be still part listed of the Pro Evo 2015 game, but certainly next year we'll have not have him involved on the European front. Basically, the reason why he was brought in is to make Pro Evo big in Europe, because obviously FIFA had a heck of a lot of a ground to stand on. And let's be honest, PES probably trumped FIFA for quite a number of years. It's only in the last couple of years, probably since FIFA 13, that people have said FIFA is the better game. For at least FIFA 12, back down to probably Pro Evolution Soccer 2, which was 2001, 2002. So pretty much 10 years, PES was the better game. So there you go. It's best of luck to John in whatever he's doing afterwards. Bayonetta 2 in Famitsu has got a review of 38 out of 40. That does look good. One of the games that will be at EGX, which I'll get to later. Thomas Was Alone is confirmed to be coming to PS4. There are rumours as well it will also be coming to the Wii U and the Xbox One. World of Warcraft is having a name purge for your account. So if you haven't been on your account in a while and you've got a very good name, like Dirk Diggler or something like that, I don't know, you're going to have to get active with it soon. It might even have gone by now because the purge is happening over what started last week, and I think it's going for the next couple of weeks. So get on there, get active if you want that name still. Is actually the story that I was talking about with Sony. Sony is now forecasting an annual net loss of $2 billion. This isn't hugely on the gaming front. It's more because they're really transitioning out of computers and laptops, I think. To some extent, they're transitioning out of that and going into the more profitable areas where it's working. Clearly, the gaming at the minute is very big for them. Tablets, obviously, probably televisions as well, although that's starting to decrease somewhat. But that's pretty much for everybody. Also news from Sony, PlayStation developers that use the PlayStation platform will now be able to use the Unity Pro Engine for free. That will be provided by Unity, I guess, as some sort of deal with Sony, which is, considering how many good games have started with Unity Pro, quite a few of the games that are going to be actually on as part of the Res selection at EGX run Unity Pro, or I know Unreal 4 is the opposite, is a different product, but quite a lot of them are starting from these small core engines. And the fact that it's available free of charge to people is a pretty good deal, I will say. New info regarding co-op mode will be coming in the next few days, hopefully. I'm kind of wondering whether that might be revealed at EGX, because there is a developer session regarding it. Alien Isolation. Some details on the new DLC, or one of the DLC packs as part of the season pass now. It's not just the Ellen Ripley thing and whatever. There is now Survivor Mode, which will be in the game as somewhat of a demo, but in order to get the full experience and the full list of challenges, you will have to get the DLC for it. Basically, what it is, it will put you in situations which aren't part of the game itself, but the whole idea will be sort of similar to Hitman, when you could challenge your friends to do a mission in a certain way and basically get a score, share it with your friends, try and get top of the leaderboard. The one demo that I have seen is basically you have to go into an area and do certain things, but the twist is, as soon as you open the door and the timer starts, the alien is pretty much in front of you. So it's a bit tenterhook, nail-biting sort of thing. It's certainly something that I'm looking forward to hopefully playing at EGX. Depends how long the queues are, because I know there's probably about 80,000 people. It's 20,000 a day. So it's basically a case of working out where I want to go and everything. Destiny, Activision officially revealed it took $325 million in customer sales in its first 5 days. Not half a million dollars in terms of sales to stores. We're actually talking cash that they actually got as part of the fact that people actually bought the thing, not shipped in. We're actually talking sales, proper sales. So, yeah, we've pretty much made the budget back, to be honest. There are some mixed views on it. I think because people are expecting it to be just a game in itself and people aren't entirely satisfied. But the thing that I think people have got to realise is this is they've already said this is a 10-year vision. So clearly this is going to be expanded on and expanded on over the next few years, certainly. NHL 2K has returned. It's going to be a mobile title, though, but it's certainly in the same style as... From the way it looks to be in the same style graphically as probably like NHL... Oh, I don't even remember. NHL Jam or whatever it was. Power Play, I think it might have been. Basically the midway sort of style. That sort of approach. It's not entirely a sim, it's more of an arcade thing, probably because it's mobile, but yeah. It's officially coming, I think it's in the next month or two. Certainly soon. A Silent Hill, I'd say teaser trailer, but a new trailer got shown at Tokyo Game Show with a new sort of creature monster thing, and it looks creepy and terrifying. I don't even want to describe it because I certainly remember a bit with a corpse with worms coming out of its mouth and also its head because the corpse was on the floor, from the neck where it had been severed off. Very weird. It's got the hallmarks of Del Toro and Kojima all over it. Regarding Metal Gear Solid as well. It's officially confirmed to be coming out in 2015. It's not going to be delayed any further. It will be coming out at some point next year. D4, Dark Dreams Don't Die, without sort of any real notice, is launched already on the Xbox One. And people really seem to be impressed by it. And it really is proving that Swervy, I think his name was... I think that's his nickname anyway. He really is a good visionary in terms of games, so I think we found our new Suda51. Yeah, a lot of good reviews for that, so go check that out if you want, although you might, I would say wait, but I don't know whether it would be part of the Xbox Games with Gold deal. It might be, you never know. Ubisoft is looking into bringing Assassin's Creed Rogue to the PC. Obviously, it'd be relatively easy because the platform's already transitioned over. You can already get ports of Unity and all the other games have been. And I think what it is people on PC would like the whole package, really, of Rogue along with Unity to get the full story, because I don't know if they're entirely related. I'm guessing they must be. But yeah, Ubisoft is looking into it. That's all they've really said, so that probably means it is coming probably next year. Regarding Assassin's Creed, though, as well, they've announced some of the details for the DLC season pass, which will be coming with the game, which includes Assassin's Creed Unity Dead Kings, which will be a new campaign set in Saint-Denis, which is sort of, it's not Paris, but it's really a suburb of Paris, I'd say, really. The Stade de France, which is in Paris technically, is in the city of Saint-Denis. So really it's sort of, I don't know, I'm trying to think of the equivalent. I don't think there is an equivalent in America. It's probably in terms of California and Los Angeles and San Francisco. I know they're not immediately next to each other like it is with Saint-Denis and Paris. I'm speaking like I'm French. But yeah, there will be, I think they said, 3 new missions in Paris, but the majority of the ones for this Dead Kings campaign will be set in Saint-Denis. And yeah, I've got to say it like that because it isn't Saint-Denis. It is Saint-Denis. That's the way it's pronounced. But the big one is a standalone game. Will be DLC. Assassin's Creed Chronicles China. It's going to be 2.5D in style and very much stylized like the Chinese paintings. It's going to have its own art style, let's say. It's not going to be Assassin's Creed Unity exact. And we'll be following Xiao Jun in his times in China. Which, I think he appeared in Assassin's Creed Legacy, was it? The, like, fan film? Well, not the fan film, but the 30-minute sort of movie, which was introducing Ezio, because Ezio trained Xiao Jun. So, basically, he is the student to Ezio's tutor. So, it's going to be a case of, it's not the Imperial Japan that quite a lot of people were wanting, but we are heading to the Orient for some mysterious stuff. And also killing people. Apparently there's also a new set of weapons that are going to be included, including the guillotine blade. Which, I guess, does that mean decapitation? We'll see. Or I guess it's going to be some sort of thing where it's going to go chonk. That is a technical term, by the way. Yeah, I don't know. Need for Speed Rivals Complete Edition has been announced to be coming out in November, hiding the fact that there is no racing game coming out this year from EA, especially because Battlefield isn't coming out until next year. Because I know by the way they're teasing it, the racing game part of it will be the demo at this week's EGX coming up. Final Fantasy XIII will be coming to Steam on October the 9th. Final Fantasy IV just got added as well, so it looks like gradually the Final Fantasies are coming out. 3's already on there, 7's already on there, I think 8 is, not sure about 9, but the majority of them are, I think 12 is now. They're all gradually getting added, so all we need now is all the rest of them, and then everybody will be able to play Final Fantasy and not have an excuse for it. Sony and PlayStation are debuting the TV streaming service later this year, according to the Wall Street Journal. Basically, by the looks of it, it's going to be sort of the equivalent of the Xbox being able to connect to your TV and all that, so you can use it as a TV tuner. But in essence, it's also trying to be competing with Google Chromecast because of the rise in demand for streaming and on-demand video and everything like that. Minecraft fans, the PlayStation 4 version of Minecraft is already out, but there will be a disc edition coming out on October the 7th, so in a couple of weeks. those of you who do want a, you know, a disc edition rather than the download version, don't worry, they're sorted there. Persona 4 Arena Ultimax will be coming to Europe in November. I think it's so definitely coming to November in America now, but it was still to be confirmed in Europe, but we now know it's coming at some point in November. Triad Wars got teased late last week, but got revealed earlier today on Monday. That's when I'm recording it. Apologies, people. It's the successor to Sleeping Dogs, and it's an open-world PC online game. It's everybody's experience will be different. From what I can tell, they haven't hugely expressed the fact that you'll be running into other players and everything. But certainly it's using the bare bones in the engine and the setting of Sleeping Dogs. So it's basically, rather than focusing on the cop side, this is focusing on the crime, and basically you've got to create and basically create a criminal empire of your own to have in the game, and you'll be rivaling against other factions, which could mean you might be rivaling against other players that have got big franchises and everything as well. Activision have hired Rudy Giuliani, yeah, the former New York mayor, to basically represent them in this lawsuit regarding Manuel Noriega suing for his likeness being used in Black Ops 2. Basically, Rudy's saying, well, he's a terrorist, so he's not really a nice guy anyway. Plus, if he did get money, who knows what it would be used on. And, of course, the whole American free speech deal, which is a fair point. This is still going on, I guess. Whether they'll come to a settlement, I don't know, but we'll see. Another big one, which has only just developed, really, Neil Stephenson. He created a game, or had a concept for a game called, working title, I think, was Clang, which was a sword fighter, which was supposed to be using peripherals. It was sort of not Oculus based, but it was that sort of thing. It was going to be a motion controller style thing for this game. That game got funded with $526,000. Stevenson has now cancelled the project altogether, basically saying, we love the fact that you liked it, but nobody else did. That was the basic funding in order to try and be an enticement to get other publishers on board, you know, to get major publishers on board to believe in our cause sort of thing. And nobody did. So it's been cancelled. Coincidentally, later that same day, Kickstarter came out and have now pretty much said that there's a new guideline saying it's pretty much obligatory for there to be some sort of reward back to the people who are backers of successful projects that get cancelled or go under, let's say. There should be some sort of way to reimburse them, even if it isn't directly by refunding them, but by giving them other products. Relatively similar to what Yogscast is trying to do after the failure of their video game project that was Kickstarter funded. So at least Kickstarter are now trying to sort that out, but I guess we're just waiting for that one moment or that one bit when somebody's going to sue Kickstarter and then the shit could hit the fan. We'll see. And then finally, in the what the hell story, we had a endorsement of the iPhone 6 this week. The person said, oh, my old model was so crap with the screen and it got damaged quite a lot, and I just needed a phone with a bigger screen, and thank God the iPhone 6 has this. And this was put out on the Facebook page of Joan Rivers. Yes, Joan Rivers was communicating from beyond the veil to endorse the iPhone 6 and that you should buy one. Despite dying, I'd say, close to a month ago. Apparently, this was an automated deal done in conjunction with Apple. Apple, in their infinite stupidity, decided to automate it on her Facebook feed or Twitter feed because it was a paid agreement. It was pulled within a few hours, but certainly a lot of people on Twitter were basically going, wow, this is how much Apple cares. They're basically using and abusing, should I say, the dead to publicize their stuff. If that's the case, why hasn't Steve Jobs tweeted about anything? Come on. Come on. He's got to be around. Get a Ouija board or something. I don't know. Anyway, Apple have apologized. And yes, it's... I think it's water under the bridge, shall we say. It's all been sorted. So, that's all on the news front for gaming. I'll talk about EGX later on, but after this break, it'll be movie and entertainment news and quite a few reviews for quite a few good movies, actually, and one hell of a play. So, that'll be coming up after this break.
It's me, Mr. Money on the Mic, Jeff Jackson. And make sure you're checking out SNS Unplugged each and every Tuesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, as myself and Bronxzilla, Tony J. Mirabella, bring you the latest news of the week, sponsored by wrestling-online.com, the NXT Rewind with Anthony Farley, everything that went down on Raw via the Raw Reaction, plus your phone calls and emails, and you never know what craziness might happen on the show. Once again, every Tuesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, SNS Unplugged, exclusively on the SNS Radio Network, www.snsradionetwork.com. It's unscripted. Uncensored. Unbelievable. It's Unplugged.
I don't consider myself a normal podcast host. I like to think of positives in wrestling before I strike judgment.
Brian Maverick Bertrand.
I just feel that everyone deserves to have a second, third, fourth, fifth chance if they learn from their mistakes.
Running the ropes.
Do I consider CM Punk a crybaby? No, because he would have done exactly what everyone else in the entire world would have done in his situation.
Hey guys, Brian Maverick Bertrand here, and you can catch all the live recorded episodes of Running the Ropes every week with a special broadcast on Thursdays right here on the SNS Radio Network.
Can I just get an intern that's not going to accidentally sabotage my show for once? Come on.
If you trained, say your prayers, and ate your vitamins, then you'll love The Hulkamania Chronicles. Sean Beckerman, host of Beyond the Bell, your pro wrestling nostalgia podcast, breaks down the history and career of the legendary Hall of Famer, the immortal Hulk Hogan. Each edition covers a different era in the history of the Hulkster as we relive our childhood hero. From the beginning of Hulkamania in the mid-80s and the birth of WrestleMania, through the challenging times of the steroid trial, all the way to his jump to WCW and the formation of Hollywood Hogan and the New World Order, and then his return to the WWF leading in to the Hall of Fame. This edition covers it all. You can catch the Hulkamania Chronicles exclusively on Beyond the Bell here on the SNS Radio Network, brother.
Hey everybody, this is the Bronx Father to tell you about the Get in the Zone podcast every weekend right here on the SNS Radio Network with myself, my co-host Anthony Farley, and bringing you the TNA recap.
No! God, please, no! No!
L Train. We also cover SmackDown, some news, and you might even get moments like this.
Oh, my brother! Testify!
Wow.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, my God. Wow, that wasn't half bad.
What the f***?
To quote... See, since I'm imitating D-Von tonight, I might as well run the gamut of black wrestlers and go with Booker T. Tell me I did not just... Hear that.
It's one of those things to edit. To edit or not to edit? That is the question.
For the reaction to Anthony's giving, you cannot edit this one.
Oh, shit. Anthony's dead. He's just done. Oh, we might as well just end the show right now. So... check out the archive every single weekend and drop us an email anytime, snsgetinthezone@gmail.com, right here on the SNS Radio Network.
Did you dig that?
Hey guys, it's me, Mr. Money on the Mic, Jeff Jackson. And I want to take a moment to let you guys know that personally, I appreciate the support that we've had here on the SNS Radio Network over the years. And I'm here to tell you about a new way that you can help us out and show your support for the SNS Radio Network. We now have a way for you to donate to the SNS Radio Network. If you go to the snsradionetwork.com main page, scroll down. There is now a donate button on the page. Now, I'm not saying you have to donate to us, but your donation is very appreciated as we do a lot of hard work on the SNS Radio Network. Spend a lot of our time and our own money to make sure that you guys have entertaining podcasts and live shows on the SNS Radio Network. So to those who have donated so far, on behalf of the SNS Radio Network, we appreciate you and your continued support. And for those that will donate in the future, again, we thank you for your support of the SNS Radio Network. www.snsradionetwork.com, providing you with free podcasts since 2010.
Welcome back to the second part of this week's SNS Sticks and Flicks with me, Ashley Richardson, and yeah, that is relevant to one of the films, somehow. I'll get to that anyway. First up, movie and entertainment news, and we'll start off with the Assassin's Creed movie. Talked last week with Mindwipe about how Robert Downey Jr. was rumoured to be part of it. However, Assassin's Creed has now been delayed and will move beyond summer 2015. It was supposed to be an August 7th release, but that now isn't happening. Instead, the reboot of the Fantastic Four will be taking its spot, moving from June, so it's moving ahead a couple of months. But yeah, the Assassin's Creed film, they haven't really given a firm release date as to whether it will be later in 2015 or whether it will get delayed on further, but certainly we won't be seeing it next summer, which is unsurprisingly considering I don't think filming's even started yet. That means they'd have to get working on it pretty damn quickly. It's been officially confirmed that Jack Houston will be Ben-Hur in the reboot. That's the one we talked about last week, how Morgan Freeman is going to be basically Ben-Hur's sort of trainer and everything. Rumour has it Toby Kebbell, who obviously most recently played Cobra in Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, he is in talks for being the villain, Messala. I'm not sure it's pronounced, but yeah, I would approve of that greatly. Greatly, I tell you. Greatly. I like saying the word greatly. Clearly. Some test footage has been revealed for Sony's CGI version of Popeye. Now, my thoughts on this footage, see, it's interesting because people have said it's very similar in style to how Peanuts is coming back. The thing is, the Peanuts stuff does seem to look and have the wit and charm that we've already seen. This Popeye stuff, it just doesn't look right. I guess it's something to do with the design of them. You expect Snoopy to look a certain way, mainly because I've got quite a lot of the McDonald's toys when they came out with them, at least in the UK. I'm not sure if they did a worldwide deal. It probably did. But I've seen him in sort of 3D, not just in his 2D cartoon form. And in essence, the form of them aren't that dissimilar. This Popeye stuff, it just looks, it looks Yogi Bear-esque, as in, well, no, because Yogi Bear did actually look a bear. It just doesn't look right. Hopefully it appeals to somebody, but I'm not a fan of it. Certainly from this early test footage. I guess we've got to find out what actually happens when it becomes a full movie in itself. Adam McKay will be returning to directing soon. He's signed up for a new comedy from Ben Schwartz, who was one of the writers from Parks and Recreation. That's all we really know about it. We don't know anything about the plot of the thing. It's just that Adam McKay will be back. He's obviously developing quite a few things. Manimal, like I've talked about, with Will Ferrell, and quite a few other ideas, but certainly there is a new project from him in the works. Aubrey Plaza. Yes, apparently she got done in the Fappening and all that sort of hacking stuff. Well, she's also coming up in a film next week called Life After Beth, which is basically a boyfriend is missing his girlfriend after she dies in a climbing accident, and then she comes back from the dead. So it's a romantic comedy with a difference, except, I don't know. I might see it, I might not. I have the chance to see it for free, but I might not. I don't know. I'll see how I feel. I might not, because it doesn't entirely look that good, despite the fact it is Dane DeHaan, or whatever it's pronounced, and Aubrey herself. The problem is, it's coming out the same time, pretty much, as Gone Girl. And I'm really grim forward to Gone Girl. It's a lot more than the other stuff, so. Yeah, but anyway, Aubrey Plaza, they've just announced that she is going to be the voice in the TV movie of the Grumpy Cat. Who thought it would be a good idea to do... This is like the equivalent of... And the Americans won't get this. Only a few, if they've somehow managed to see it, which I pity you. This, I think, is going to be very similar to Pudsey the movie. It's going to be an animal which has got an expression and a life of its own, but it's going to be voiced by a person in some weird sort of wacky thing. And it's going to be absolutely atrocious. Absolutely atrocious. Let's hope it isn't, but Grumpy Cat the TV movie? Why? Ugh. Jada Pinkett Smith and Andy McDowell are confirmed to be joining Magic Mike XXL. They are in the cast list. They're filming now. However, it has been confirmed that McConaughey will not be reprising his role. I guess he's busy doing quite a lot of other stuff. But yeah, it looks like the women are going to be having some sort of deal. I think there was another announcement on casting front regarding that, but I can't remember what it is off the top of my head. Probably coming for next week's news, more than likely. Matt Smith is set to be Mr. Collins in the Pride and Prejudice and Zombies film, which is in production right now. We've already had the casting of Darcy and Elizabeth Bennet and all the main characters so far, but we're starting to pad it out, and obviously Natalie Portman's on board. Was originally attached to star, but she is now producing. But it's a good book, so how it will transfer to the screen will be interesting. Doctor Strange is officially confirmed to be coming in July 2016. It will be filming in the UK. No word on casting yet, obviously, but it's good to see it's going to be a British production of sorts. Hopefully they get it right, and considering the date, I'm guessing they might be starting filming early next year, I'd say, possibly. Official confirmation now that Paranormal Activity 5 will be coming out in 2015. I don't know whether this is sort of like how they did it with Paranormal Activity, the marked ones, in terms of releasing it right at the start of January, rather than being at a scary time like Halloween. And Paranormal Activity 5 is now entitled Paranormal Activity 5 still, but it's now got a subtitle of The Ghost Dimension. If they've suddenly dropped the number 5 in terms of The Ghost Dimension, you know that this isn't a Paranormal Activity sequel. Like how the marked ones really didn't appeal and really wasn't that good because it was an unnecessary sequel. 1 and 2 of Paranormal Activity I really liked. When the budget went up and you didn't notice the difference in quality, that's where my gripes are. That's my honest deal there. If you can do something on a shoestring budget and then have millions and millions of dollars and still make it look like it's on a shoestring budget, it makes me wonder why you got the millions and millions of dollars when you could have done it on a slightly bigger shoestring budget. I don't know what the budget is for Paranormal Activity 5. Probably $4 billion. So it's about the price of Disney buying Marvel. Probably. Tom Hiddleston is confirmed to be part of Skull Island. I know Walkie mentioned that as well, but it's now confirmed that Jordan Voight Roberts is going to be directing from The Kings of Summer. The reason why I'm mentioning this, I really love The Kings of Summer, and it's great to see him. Voight Roberts himself is also being lined up, reportedly, to be doing the Metal Gear Solid movie. So, oh, it's... I guess he's in good demand, which is good to see. James Darcy is confirmed to be part of Agent Carter. He'll be playing Edwin Jarvis, who is Howard Stark's butler. Jarvis. Stark's butler. I wonder what's going on there. I guess because Paul Bettany wasn't available. But yeah, so we will be seeing... Obviously, we won't be seeing Dominic Cooper as Howard Stark. I can't remember who it was that's cast. But yeah, Agent Carter will be seeing James Darcy in there, certainly. When it comes, I think it's early next year. Now, after long rumours of it not happening, there is reports now that there is a reconsideration and we might be getting a fifth Bourne film. Now, some of you are going, that isn't a surprise. The big surprise is it might actually have Jason Bourne in it. Word is that Matt Damon and Paul Greengrass are in talks to actually come back to the franchise and have the fifth film focused around on him again. But I think down the line, the plan for what the fifth film was with Jeremy Renner's Aaron Cross character, that will now be incorporating along with Bourne in terms of the sixth film. And possibly that, I guess, could be the end of the franchise. I don't know. But certainly, it's really a case that if that happens, oh my word. Considering Greengrass's reputation and the fact that Damon will be back, I think we'd see a resurgence in that franchise, certainly. Adam Wingard, who directed You're Next and the recently reviewed from me, The Guest, is set to be remaking a Korean film by the name of I Saw the Devil, which, from what I know, I haven't seen it myself, but it is sort of in a similar vein to You're Next and The Guest. It certainly isn't, it's a horror and a thriller sort of aspect thing, but it's not, it's occasionally it does have tongue-in-cheek sort of humorous moments like You're Next and The Guest have. So I guess it's a sensible choice for director there, I'd say. In terms of horror movies as well, Sony, in their infinite... Well, I shouldn't keep saying infinite. Sony is deciding to reboot the franchise of I Know What You Did Last Summer. We might be seeing that return again. The reason why perhaps you shouldn't be so worried about this is they are apparently hiring Mike Flanagan, the writer and director of the hit cult hit. The cult hit. Yeah, it's that much of a hit. Oculus. He will be part of reimagining, rebooting the franchise. So there's some certain chance there. Leslie Mann is in talks for the vacation movie as it's going by. Ed Helms will be playing as the grown-up Rusty of the family, married to Christina Applegate. Leslie Mann is apparently going to be Audrey, and she is now married to a TV anchor man, played by Chris Hemsworth. Yeah, apparently Chris Hemsworth is going to be a TV anchor man. It's a bit of a casting change, but I guess the best bit is Yes, Christina Applegate is going to be in a film involving an Anchorman. Think there's anything there? Probably not, but, you know, it's pretty good. Chevy Chase is reportedly set to be making some sort of cameo back in his role, so that's going to be good. Once again, there are rumours of a Star Wars Obi-Wan spin-off film coming, exploring his backstory more. I mean, Ewan McGregor's pretty available quite often now, so I guess you could do it. Despite the fact, well, it had a relatively good weekend, apparently, in America. It doesn't come out here, I think, till next month, for some reason. But the sequel to The Maze Runner is officially entitled The Scorch Trials and is coming next year. We know it's already in production, but I think it's supposed to be coming out this time next year as well. So I guess we're rapidly doing that. It took, certainly in the US box office, about 30 to 35 million. And the budget, I think, was about 37 or 38 million. So, in essence, it's already made its money back. My only problem with it is it looks like Hunger Games. It looks like Divergent. It looks like every other young adult adventure novel thing that's come out. And once you have seen so many, it does get a bit of, which is this one again? And also, is the May supposed to look like the logo for Silver Pictures? That's just my thought. Don't worry, I've seen that trailer quite a bit. David Ayer is in talks to possibly be directing the DC Suicide Squad movie. If you don't know David Ayer, recently he did Sabotage, which was okay. His upcoming movie next month is Fury with Brad Pitt and Shia LaBeouf and Logan Lerman, I think, based in World War II. And also directed and wrote Hard Times and End of Watch, which were two very good films. And was writer, although he didn't direct them, of Training Day and the very first Fast and Furious film. So he's a good director. So hopefully he doesn't screw it up with the Suicide Squad if he decides to do it. And finally, it's officially confirmed that Max Borenstein, who did the script or was a main part of writing the script for Godzilla, the reboot a few months back, and the upcoming Skull Island, he is officially on to be writing the sequel to Godzilla, which is coming in the next few years. So I approve of that. He did a pretty good job with the first one. No pressure on the second one, but bigger. Well, we already know we're going bigger because we've got other monsters coming in, but anyway. Right, reviews. Quite a lot to get through, so I might have to be brief on quite a lot of them, if not all of them. So first up, National Theatre were, well, NT Live, should I say, screened the Young Vic Theatre in London, their production of A Streetcar Named Desire. And Lordy Lord, this was a great production. That's all I can say, really. It was massively impressive. You know, the whole backstory obviously is Blanche DuBois, played brilliantly by Gillian Anderson. I wouldn't be surprised if she was a nomination, if not a win, for some of the award categories. Really does a fantastic job. Her fragile world is crumbling in around her, which I won't get into too much details if you haven't seen the film, because it is a very harrowing tale. In essence, it's certainly a mental illness topic that's covered. That's probably as oblique as I'll go on that. But she's basically, you know, she's getting in trouble and everything, and then turns to her sister, Stella, played very well by Vanessa Kirby, who appeared in another production done by the director, Benedict Andrews. She appeared in his production of Three Sisters, which actually won an award from, I think it was the London Critics Circle, for her performance there. Certainly Benedict got a... Yeah, I think Benedict Andrews got an award for direction and whatever. I think she got nominated, but I don't think she won. She's also been in the BBC adaptation recently of Great Expectations. But, yeah, Blanche DuBois, she then comes face-to-face with Stanley Kowalski. Obviously, the film, I think it was Stanley Kowalski was Marlon Brando. In this, it's Ben Foster, who really has been on the rise in the last year or so, with his turns in Kill Your Darlings and Lone Survivor, amongst other stuff. And yeah, it really... The staging as well, it's on a revolving 360 stage. So for most of the production, it's on a very slow spin. So everybody in the audience gets their own unique view as the play goes on. And it is very seedy in places. There is a nice... Whatever that jazz music is that opens the thing, that's damn good jazz. That's all I'm saying. You know, there are some very odd, sort of seductive sort of moments, but that's mainly because of Blanche's character and, I guess, Stanley's desires and everything like that. But, yeah, it's a very good production. Really, and Gillian Anderson is probably going to stand out and be in with a chance, as I say, of award contention, certainly. But yeah, if you can check it out, do so. It's going to be about 3 hours from what I remember in terms of running time, so you might want to make sure you've got food and drinks by the interval when that comes. If you do go and see it, if it is screened internationally where you are. They actually did announce as well they're doing a international screening for John Steinbeck's Of Mice and Men with James Franco and Chris O'Dowd, which got very high acclaim. And apparently it will be coming to the UK later. That's all they've said. My feeling is, I think it could be 2015, but they could suddenly spring it up and say it's on in November. But I doubt they would, because they'd give more notice. So I'd say probably next year for that. Also, in terms of plays, I went to see Salome, which is a little-known Oscar Wilde piece of work from close to the end of his life. I think it was the 1890s that he wrote it, and was only performed once in his lifetime in Paris, I think in 1896. From what I remember from the notes that was part of the whole thing that I saw. And, yeah, it's really, again, it's sort of mental in terms of what it's exploring. So, this play is directed by Al Pacino. Or certainly the film version is directed by Al Pacino. I shouldn't really say it's a play, because in actual fact, the original stage version was actually a read-through rather than a play, an actual stage play, which a lot of the critics didn't like. But I would say, you know, I'm not a huge fan of it, but I do like the fact that it's taking a different approach to the aspect of dealing with the project and just doing it in a different style. So the whole idea is Salome is the daughter of Herodias, queen to King Herod, played by Pacino. I must mention here, Salome is played by Jessica Chastain. And the key thing about this is, despite all her notoriety now with Zero Dark Thirty and Mama and all that stuff, quite a lot of films that she's done, The Debt, the US remake of that. This was the very first thing that she did before Hollywood picked her up and took her, you know, used her aplenty. The whole story is, yeah, Salome is the daughter of Herodias, who in turn is wife to King Herod. The key thing you need to know here is Herod killed his own brother because he liked his brother's wife, who was Herodias. So basically, he bunked him off just to do it. If you're wondering as well, this King Herod, I believe, is the son of King Herod, as in King Herod, kill all the babies because I want to kill Jesus. Deal. Possibly this is an influence on the whole story. Because Herod has imprisoned, I think it's Yonavon. I think it's pronounced like that. Yonavon, I think it's something like that. And basically, he is John the Baptist, and he's in prison somewhere in the sewers. And John the Baptist is proclaiming how, you know, one day he will come and he will put me out of my misery and show you all for what you truly are. And Salome, basically there's a dinner party going on, or a feast, and Salome is sick of Herod eyeing her up, so she goes out onto the terrace and she notices John the Baptist cries, and she wants to go and see him. Now, you've got all the guards there, but there's one guard in particular who seemingly is infatuated with her. So he basically is wooed by Salome to let John the Baptist out so she can see him. Which he does so. And Salome really is heavily infatuated with John and really wants to kiss his lips. John, obviously being the guy that he is basically saying, I don't want anything to do with you. You know, you were the daughter of Herodias. You were the daughter of basically the devil, sort of thing. I will not have relations with you. And Salome is disgusted by this. You know, she desperately wants to kiss his lips. And the guard, who's infatuated with Salome, is so disturbed by this that he actually kills himself. So they have to quickly try and hide the body because Herod is supposedly very suspicious of all this stuff. He sees it as bad omens. And of course, what happens? Herod and Herodias come out onto the terrace saying, you know, Salome, where are you? I mean, it's like, oh, it's a good night outside. There's a big moon. Right, we'll have the feast. We'll continue the feast here. Basically, just because he likes Salome, really. And you can see he's sort of a little bit wacky and crazy with some mental issues at certain points. You know, imagining things and hearing the batter of winds and things like that. And wants Salome to dance for him the Dance of the Seven Veils, which is a very erotic dance. And in most productions that have been done previously, basically Salome goes naked. It doesn't properly happen here. Jessica Chastain does go topless, which I think some people probably somewhere around the world were probably going, oh, she can get naked. Boo. But she does the dance because Herod offers her anything in the world to basically do the dance for her, and she does it, and he clearly gets his kicks from it. And then he basically says, right, what do you want? And she says, I want John the Baptist's head on a silver platter. And then for about 10 or 15 minutes, Herod is basically going, look, you know, "What? Don't you want all these gems?" And she's very adamant, "No, she wants John's head." Offering her all these wealth and riches, even offering to bunk her own mother off the throne so she can be queen with him. But she's adamant that she still wants the head. And then even going as far as all these treasures that nobody knows about, all these great details like golden apples, which when bitten become silver, and all these things. But she is adamant and desperate that she wants her love, the head of John the Baptist. And when, well, certainly when the dance happens, the moon turns blood red, sort of as John the Baptist prophesies when bad things happen. And John the Baptist is beheaded, eventually. There is sort of a delay at times, which Salome is immediately disapproving of. It's like, how dare? Do it for me. It's been decreed. And the head is presented on a platter. And she's then going, oh, you know, now I kiss your lips. You have no choice. But obviously, because he's dead, his eyes do not open and he doesn't see it. So she's immediately going, she's immediately realizing this has been all for nothing. You know, she has him, but doesn't really have him because of her wants and desires. And Herod, right at the end, decrees that because she is such a loose cannon, I guess, she must be killed. And that's how the play ends, which is, for a 70-minute thing, that's rather sort of, wow. It's very powerful even at this time, because obviously you've got the whole religious controversy, and also somewhat the sexuality controversy. So, like, with her making out with basically the head of a corpse. And the fact that there's, like, blood and everything, and she sort of revels in it. It's controversial. With Salome, there was the documentary Wild Salome, again directed by Al Pacino, which was basically the behind-the-scenes making of. And it really shows you how somewhat of a loose cannon Al Pacino is himself, and really how indebted he is to the works of Oscar Wilde, because he saw the Stephen Berkoff version of the play about 15 years ago, apparently, in London, and was immediately enthralled by it so much that he wanted to get the production going. And it took him at least 10 years from when he saw it, because I think it was 2009, 2010 when it actually happened. The film of the play is 2013, and the actual documentary is 2011. But it really gives you an insight into Al Pacino's workings and his interests, and also the life of Oscar Wilde as well, which is rather depressing in itself. There is some live action bits where Al Pacino does play Oscar Wilde for a little bit, but interestingly, his partner at the time, who was, I'm trying to think, not Bodie, not Bowie, I'm trying to remember. I made a note of it and I can't find my notes. But basically his partner, who caused him to go into prison and arguably get the, I think he got an ear infection which became meningitis, but he received that from prison because he refused to leave because he was still infatuated with his partner, really. And basically the whole thing is his partner in the, when they reconstruct it, is actually played by Jack Huston, a.k.a. Ben-Hur. So it was nice to see him sort of in there, given a little recognition, which I didn't recognise. And I think Stephen Fry was in it for a split second as somebody in Reading Jail, which where Oscar Wilde spent 2 years of his life. Basically, because I think the Victorians didn't understand him. But yeah, the documentary was very good. And then there was a live Q&A with Stephen Fry hosting, with Al Pacino and Jessica Chastain, really going into details. And there was like some good sort of Hollywood gossip, things like that from Stephen and Al, and really their fondness for Wilde and his works. And just the establishing the fact that Jessica Chastain was nobody before this production. And now she's probably one of the hottest tickets in terms of getting an actress for your film, for certainly for drama stuff. And you know, the fact that she's been in Debt and Zero Dark Thirty and I can't even remember, Mama, and loads of other things. Clearly she's The Help, I think she was in as well. She got found by Al Pacino, so I guess we can all thank him for her roles in the future and whatever. But yeah, overall, very good production, I will say. So, finally, the movies. So, I'm trying to think. A Most Wanted Man, which is the spy thing, hence what I played earlier. That is a very good, I will say, thriller, drama piece, really, regarding spying in Germany, sort of after post 9/11, because apparently the 9/11 attack was planned in Germany, and Germany is still seen as a hub for quite a few of major successful attacks, I think, like the Madrid bombing, I think, as well, but also the attempted, I think, possibly 7/7, certainly other attacks around the world, some in Europe certainly as well, have originated from Germany. So it basically explores this guy coming from Chechnya, who is down on the list as being a terrorist. And Philip Seymour Hoffman as the German sort of head of their little spy branch, as opposed to the major branch and whatever. Basically working on it, and also at the same time trying to ensnare Dr. Faisal Abdullah, I think his name is, who's this sheikh who seems to be very anti-terror, but the man... Hoffman is adamant that he is somehow to do with terrorism, really. And so it's all a part of basically working out how to somehow incorporate the two, because basically the Chechen guy's father has left him sort of money in a secure bank account. Managed by the bank manager, played by Willem Dafoe, whose father was apparently friends with the Chechen rebel's father. He's there illegally, the Chechen, and he doesn't have a passport and whatever, but he gets a lawyer, played by Rachel McAdams, to sort of represent him in the deals. And then Robin Wright shows up as the US sort of... onlooker, you know, just overseeing, not getting hands on or anything. And it then revolves into a espionage sort of thing as to what is he actually doing here? Is he trying to commit acts of terror? And then by the end, when the final, it gets really tense, and the fact is it's all done over a piece of paper and a screen connected to a van and things like that. And that's the biggest tension. And then just when you think it's all right, it comes with a very surprise ending, really. Which then also goes to show you that sometimes you can't really trust Americans. Shall I say? You know, I won't go in too much into details, but the fact is, by the end, Philip Seymour Hoffman's character drives off, gets out of his car a few blocks down, and then just walks off, and that's the end of the film. It doesn't have a happy ending, and in essence, the ending might pretty much seems to hint that the actions of the Americans may lead to future attacks and things like that because of their heavy-handedness, rather than the approach that Philipp Seymour Hoffmann and the Germans were taking. So, yeah, it's a very good film, I would say. It's something you should certainly... I think you'll enjoy. And it's also a great performance from Philipp Seymour Hoffmann. It's just a shame that he decided to take his own life with drugs. On a lighter note slightly, The Riot Club. The sort of true... Well, I wouldn't say true story, but it's clearly inspired by the Bullingdon Club, where quite a lot of the British hierarchy of politicians have come from. And the Riot Club is basically a select group of high-flying individuals in Oxford University, a group of 10, who basically have their own sort of clique, I guess, and then every year they have their annual dinner where things go crazy because that's the way of the Riot Club. And you've got Max Irons, who I think he's also in Pride, which I've still yet to see. And you got Sam Claflin, who's been in quite a few things. I think he was in... Oh, I'm trying to think. The Marked Ones, was it? No. That film that came out, I think it was called The Marked Ones. But he's in that, but it also has Tom Hollander in a role, in a supporting role. Douglas Booth, Jessica Brown Findlay. Weirdly, not doing anything like What's on the Fappening. And also Holiday Granger. So a good young cast, really. And basically, Max Irons comes from a relatively normal background, whereas Sam Cleflin's character comes from a certainly... His family is... been to Oxford for years and has a reputation, and let's say he's the bad apple which encourages the big stuff to happen later on. Because when they have this dinner, they have, because they've been banned from loads of places due to their actions, they go to a really remote country pub, and it basically devolves down into a very political thing, saying, you know, who needs the poor people, you know, we have the money, who cares. And eventually the owner of the establishment basically goes, look, this is he's accepting at first and whatever, but eventually he doesn't approve of their ways, and for it, gets attacked and brutally beaten up. And unsurprisingly, Max Irons' character didn't sign up for this. There was another bit as well where he basically, his phone gets taken by Cleflin's character, and his girlfriend gets taken there, and basically they want her to be sort of the prostitute and suck them all off and things like that. It's very sort of seedy and really goes to show you perhaps what the structure of society possibly is. You know, I'm not entirely happy with, if there are people like this, them being around, but I don't know. It's a good film. The weird thing is, I was the oldest person in the screen despite only being 25, which I think shows you the appeal as to who it appeals to. There was quite a lot of women clearly wanting to see the hunky men, who weirdly I think don't really get their kit off. There's only one scene in which one of them is getting sucked off by somebody. That's the only real sex scene. And yeah, that's it. So I don't know why most of them went to see it. It's a good film, but it certainly it certainly doesn't go as far as it could do in terms of really being scathing at who it's clearly targeted at, which is the Bullingdon Club. It's just it couldn't be called that for legal reasons and everything. It's clearly supposed to be a spin-off from that, though. But it's a good film. I wouldn't say it's great, but certainly good. And then finally, A Walk Among the Tombstones. Liam Neeson, grizzled ex-cop, called in to solve these disappearances. Well, at first it's a disappearance of a drug dealer, a drug trafficker's wife, which then it turns out what it is he paid him the money and they hacked up the wife instead, and it then evolves around these two or three serial killers that are all about making snuff films, really, torturing women and or murdering them and getting sexual kicks out of it. There are some quite shocking moments in it. Nothing hugely shocking, hence why it's only a 15 certificate over here and probably rated R, seven, you know, not NC-17, but certainly rated R in America. It's got a very good, weirdly, it's got a very good phone scene with Liam Neeson swearing down at his, down at the people, the kidnappers. There's a very, you know, just look for the 20-second clip of the phone call that he has with them. And it basically ends with, "Are you listening, motherfucker?" It's like, whoa, whoa, this is awesome. It's a very enjoyable film. I don't know about the subplot with the kid from Earth to Echo showing up, the homeless kid, and looking after him, sort of being a wannabe private detective himself. It's sort of nice, but it sort of seems like it doesn't need to be there. It's just sort of there for exposition. But I can see it certainly being a franchise. It's a really nice put together thriller, apparently produced by Danny DeVito. That's the other disturbing thing. It was like Danny DeVito is producing this. What? Well, that's not producing, but exec producing. But yeah, it was like, wow, that's something I didn't expect to see in the credits. But it certainly explores dark, sinister things. The whole aspect of how Neeson's character has become an ex-cop rather than a cop. And also, it's very fitting as well, because the film is set in 99. The ending scene does feature the Twin Towers in the background of the World Trade Center. I can certainly see there being a sequel, and it could be a franchise, as long as they don't go annual on it. Now, every 2 or 3 years, it would be nice to see a new film, possibly around it. Even if it's a one-off, though, I'd say it's an enjoyable, it's an enjoyable drama thriller thing, really. And you sort of really don't know who these people are until towards the end. And it really doesn't get moving properly on the whole aspect of the whole deal with the criminals and him helping them out properly until the second half of the film, when it really gets into proper active investigation mode. You'll know it when you see the creepy guy in the cemetery. That's when you'll know, right, this is when stuff is starting to happen and things are going on. So, yeah, that is, it's certainly, I think you should go check it out. It did okay in the box office. I think it was beaten by the Box Trolls here. I don't think it did too bad in America in terms of box office. Obviously, Maze Runner did much better, but I think it did pretty respectably anyway. But yeah, that's all the reviews. Quite a lot to go through. Coming up after the break, it's the preview for the upcoming EGX convention. So that and a whole lot more. Well, not really a whole lot more, just the EGX stuff. after this break.
In my eyes, in the spouse, in disguises no one knows, hides the face, lies the snake, the sun in my disguise, boiling heat, summer stench. Neath the black, the sky looks dead. Call my name through the cream, and I'll hear you scream again. Black hole sun, won't you come and wash away the rain?
Hey guys, it's me, Mr. Money on the Mic, Jeff Jackson. Just a reminder for you to listen to Sunday Night Showdown every pay-per-view Sunday, as I'll be joined by my broadcast partner, the Bronx Father, Tony J. Mirabella, Harmony Boom Boom Jackson, and Mark the Shark DiCarlo, as we provide the best pay-per-view coverage of the WWE. And it starts at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific Time, every pay-per-view Sunday. Sunday Night Showdown, your home for WWE pay-per-view coverage.
Day-to-day ins and outs of the WWE, TNA, and Ring of Honor? Do you like talk radio that pulls no punches? And do you like your sci-fi and fantasy? Well, tune in to the Elite Force Podcast each and every midweek with Chuck W. and each weekend with William Walkie Walker and Mindwipe. Exclusively on the SNS Radio Network and the Chris Jones Gaming Network. Yeah.
This is going to be fun.
Hey guys, this is Ashley.
And this is Sandro.
And we're here to make sure that you check out the whole indie show each week on the SNS Radio Network, as both of us, along with our other co-host Randy, cover everything that you need to know on all things indie wrestling.
It's your place for all the most recent indie news and event results, reviews of the latest shows from all the major promotions, and previews for all the upcoming events. We also want your feedback on any indie stuff you may have seen as well.
Plus, you know, you never know. You might even get a few paperclip references now and then. So for all that and much more, listen to the whole indie show every week here on the SNS Radio Network.
Fan of wrestling shoot DVDs, wrestling action figures, wrestling memorabilia? Well, I'm pleased to announce that the SNS Radio Network is now officially an affiliate of HighSpots.com, So when you go to the SNS Radio Network site, click on the High Spots banner on the main page, and it takes you directly to High Spots. Now, I'm not saying you need to buy something from highspots.com, but if you do, you're helping to support the SNS Radio Network by going through High Spots on the link on the SNS Radio Network page. And every purchase gives a kickback to the SNS Radio Network, helping us keep all the programming here free for you.
Unplugged. CT.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled. You want answers?
I want the truth.
You can't handle the truth.
Every month on the SNS Radio Network. Check out the podcast that deals with conspiracy theories, mysteries, and the unknown. Check out Unplugged CT with Mr. Money on the Mic, Jeff Jackson, and Bronxzilla. You have questions, we have answers. Keep an open mind, because the truth is out there.
The truth shall set you free.
Welcome back to the final part of this week's SNS Sticks and Flicks with me, Ashley Richardson. And yes, that music from The Evil Within from Bethesda brings us into the EGX preview. We already know, because of shots that have been put up from outside of the building, that Evil Within, once again, in terms of Bethesda, is on the banners and on the on the front of the building. Because 2 years ago it was Elder Scrolls Online, and last year was Wolfenstein. No, sorry, 2 years ago was Dishonored, and then last year was Wolfenstein: The New Order. And this year it is Evil Within. One of the big things, though, about this year's show is it's the last ever to be done. I think it's the last ever to be done at the historic Earl's Court place, which in terms of not just gaming, but the history of that place, it held God knows how many international motor shows, various concerts from classic acts like Queen and Led Zeppelin, all going to be knocked down and demolished, which is, I don't agree with it. It's a shame it's happening. Certainly the people at Gamer Networks who put on the event have said it's a shame, you know, this part of London is losing a part of the industry, because the amount of people that did come, as I say, this year's is supposed to be getting about 80,000, but yeah, it's just going to be a shame to see it go. I'm going to do a little tribute at the end to it, sort of, in some sort of, well, I'll get to it anyway. So, the games on show, in no particular order in terms of the developers. From 2K, there's going to be Borderlands the pre-sequel. Evolve, which obviously is now coming out next year, but that's going to be there. And most importantly, for the first time in 3 years, WWE 2K15 will be there. WWE 13 and 2K14 never showed at Eurogamer Expos in previous years. It was at 2011 for WWE. It was at the 2011 show for WWE 12. But nothing since then. Activision's two big games, one that's already out, Destiny, will be there, and also Call of Duty Advanced Warfare is there, and is 18 plus this year rather than 16 plus, so it means all the kids that want to play it probably won't. So, you know, that's why it's an 18 plus, people. EA is bringing Battlefield Hardline, which is, I believe, from what they're hinting, is going to be the racing multiplayer part of it. The car chase deal. Dragon Age Inquisition multiplayer will also be there, as will FIFA 15. Microsoft will be bringing Fable Legends, Forza Horizon 2, the Master Chief Collection for Halo, Project Spark, and the pretty good-looking Sunset Overdrive. Warner Brothers are going to be having Dying Light, Lego Batman 3 Beyond Gotham, Middler Shadow of Mordor, and probably most epically, Mortal Kombat X. That's going to be there. Also, Stop Press sort of deal. Kept as a surprise, I guess. There will be a theatre showcasing something to do with Batman Arkham Knight. So that's going to be there. As I said, Bethesda's got The Evil Within. The only game this year, actually, from them. Bandai Namco will be showcasing off Project Cars, which does look to be probably the best term driving game possibly this year. Sony have got quite a lot of titles, actually. Some are actually so indie that they're on the rest stuff, but they're actually in the Sony rest section. It's that that crazy, yeah? So, with Sony, you've got Big Fest, Bloodborne, the game from the creators of Dark Souls, Drive Club, Final Horizon, Infamous First Light, mainly because the disc edition, I think, has come out only a few weeks back and people may not have picked it up. Little Big Planet 3, the PlayStation 4 version of Minecraft, Oddworld New and Tasty, SingStar Ultimate Party, which is the mobile thing, which, considering I don't have the app, I hope they have mobiles there or whatever. Super Exploding Zoo, which is from the developer of Hohokam, which is sort of tower defense with exploding animals, so that's awesome. The remastered edition of The Last of Us is going to be there. The Order 1886 will be playable, as will Until Dawn. So there's a few titles there, which hopefully if I get the chance to play, I would like to. But it's quite a lot over the 4 days, I will say that. Sega's two big ones are Alien Isolation. That could be the first one that I want to go and play out of everything, which does mean I have to go upstairs, which should be the awkward bit. I don't know. We'll see. And also Hetsune Miku Project Diva F Second. I don't know what that means, but it's going to be there. CD Projekt Red will have a demo theater for Witcher 3 Wild Hunt. Jargex will bring Transformers Universe in. Elite Dangerous will be there as well from Frontier Developments. Square Enix will be showing off Kingdom Hearts HD 2.5 Remix, Lara Croft and the Temple of Osiris, Lords of the Fallen, Nosgoth, and the definitive edition, next gen edition, I guess, of Sleeping Dogs, which is coming out next month, from what I remember. There will be some Guild Wars 2 stuff, apparently, on the show floor, although I haven't seen it properly listed anywhere. EVE Online will be there, and also so will Gaijin Entertainment's War Thunder on PS4 and PC, I guess. Nintendo, who, unsurprisingly, were last to reveal their card, they've got a load of indie stuff, which I haven't got listed here. I've got it in the files downstairs that I'm taking with me, so I know so I can do some planning the day before. But they're going to have Captain Toad Treasure Tracker, Hyrule Warriors, Monster Hunter 4 Ultimate on the 3DS will be there, Splatoon, Stealth Inc. 2, Super Smash Bros. For both the 3DS and the Wii U, and Yoshi's Woolly World, and also, from what I can vaguely remember, the Kirby game is going to be there as well. In which case, why didn't we get notice of that? That's awesome. Kirby, come on. Deep Silver. I bring in Crime and Punishment Sherlock Holmes, which I think might be already out or coming out this week, so it'll be there. Dead Island 2, Escape Dead Island, Metro Redux, which admittedly has been out for a month or so, and also Sacred 3. Ubisoft is putting all their stuff in the 18 plus zone, even The Crew, which even though it's isn't an 18 plus game. Hey kids. So they're going to have playable Assassin's Creed Rogue, but the big thing is Assassin's Creed Unity will not be playable. There will just be a demo theater for it. Apparently there's also a demo theater for Tom Clancy's The Division. I can't see it on the map. I don't know whether that's because it isn't there. Certainly they've got a developer session, though. We do know that. Also, they're going to, apart from The Crew as well, the big one, Far Cry 4. Rising Star Games showcasing quite a few things. Cloud Built, they've had the last few. They certainly had it at Res, and I think they had it last year at EGX. But they're also showcasing Chromaya, Tri, and Tolpa. Tri actually did play a bit last year and really liked. And apparently it is coming out on Steam in the next few weeks. So I might see if I can get a review copy of that, because that is one game that I am interested in. Epic Games and Unreal Engine 4 did a special thing where games could be selected to be showcased for free because they're highlighting the use of the Unreal Engine. On this, we've got Congo from The Innocent Devils, Eclipse from a startup little program, just a little side project thing, but will become a game itself. EVA 1, which is a really good game, and I'm pleased to see that there. Numa, Breath of Life from Deco Digital and Bevel Studios. Pool Nation FX, which is, I think, PS4. It's a PS4 version of Pool Nation, but it's next gen. Redout from 34 Big Things, which looks to be sort of Wipeout game-esque, which would be nice. That's Wipeout the racing game, not Wipeout with the big balls. Seek from 5 Pixels and Tiki Galore from Abyss Studios. Then we go sort of down to the PC and indie titles, so I'll just quickly go through a list and highlight some of them. Adventure Box Beyond Eyes, which does look like a nice little game where basically you play a blind character that's lost her cat, and she never normally goes outside, but because she's so attached to the cat, she's willing to go out into the wide open world despite her parents' protest, so that could be a really good game. Beyond Flesh and Blood will be there. Big Pharma, Bit Brawlers, Brave Wave. That is actually a group of musicians showcasing stuff, and there's some big ones there. Of the soundtrack person from Mega Man 1 and 2 and Mighty Number 9, as well as I think she did a couple of tracks for Shovel Knight as well. The amount of some, they've got people that did Metal Gear Solid 4 soundtrack, Ninja Gaiden. The amount of people that are signed up to it is incredible, and I'm hoping to see what they've got to offer. It's not really a game thing, it's just that they do quite a lot of music, and they're going to have some sort of thing there, I think, showcasing it off. Calvino Noir will be there, Chaos Ride, Creature Battle Lab, Dream, Eminent Xander's Tale, Fearless Fantasy, Flame Over, which is basically a firefighting game for the PS4. I already approve. Flockers, Frank and John, Gang Beasts, oh my word. Take Plasticine and Let People Fight With It. It was probably the best game of EGX Res'd back in March. It was the one that had the crowds around it a heck of a lot more than any of the rest, considering it only had one computer and a tiny screen. There was at least about 40 or 50 people there pretty much all the time, just wanting to watch, yet alone play. Warner Brothers Gauntlet is apparently going to be part of the Res section. I'd say it's a bit bigger than that, but it's a PC game, and it only just launched this week, so it's sort of, I guess, makes sense there. Gratuitous Space Battles 2, Heat Signature, Kitty Powers Matchmaker. The weirdest looking mobile tablet game I've seen, but weirdly interests me. LA Cops and Lumino City, I guess possibly Luminosity, I don't know, but Lumino City and LA Cops, they do look good in terms of the art style and everything, so I'll definitely check them out. Mendel's Farm, Minutes, Monstrum, which is sort of Slender, but on a ship, but with sort of the monsters have evolved because there's more than one monster and it's procedurally generated, so you don't know what's going to happen. Mutiny, Never Alone, which looks to be a really, really nice, certainly in terms of art style and presentation, based on sort of an Alaskan fable sort of thing, and actually, in you know, with the authority of the actual Alaskan tribe that it comes from, so that's a really nice thing. No Time to Explain will be there. Octahedron, Omega Agent, which is apparently from the developers of The Room iPad games and is specifically for the Samsung VR machine. So yeah, virtual reality stuff there. Overrule will be there, Panarium, Poncho, Prison Architect, Quest of Dungeons, Ramble Rumble, Schrodinger's Cat and the Rages of the Lost Quark, which I think is launching this week as well. Slain, Soaxium, Speedrunners will be there. Spoiler alert, Starter's Order 6, which, yes, it's Horse Simulator. It's Horse Riding Simulator. It's like G1 Jockey, only simulator style rather than actual you ride the horses deal. Tango Fiesta will be there. Terratech, The Adventures of Bertram Fiddle, The Escapist, The Joy Lancer, Legendary Motor Knight, The Living Dungeon, Room 3, despite the fact that isn't coming out till probably early next year. The Sun and Moon, Tiny Keep, Velocity 2X, which has done really well on PS4 and Vita. Verdun, Volume from Mike Biffle. Really looking forward to that one. I really enjoyed Thomas Was Alone and can't wait to see what happens with Volume. Although I have to buy a PS4 for it, which is a shame. Or a Vita. I guess Vita's cheaper. And also War for the Overworld will be there. And then there's some the indie and left field stuff. These are games selected by Eurogamer themselves to be showcased there after being submitted in. So we've got Accelerunner, which is Alan and Nichols' hyper-realistic sports day simulator 2014. From Alan Zacconi, who did Orbitalis, and Nickel David from I Fight Bears, who that was two good games from them. I can't remember Nickel's game. I apologise if you're listening, Nickel. If you are, it's incredible, but that looks to be a pretty quirky sort of game, but it's realistic, apparently. Like, you jump to jump, you run to run, things like that. Control, which is an experimental piece. Controller Wars 1D Alpha from Hazel Savage. Encrypted from Niall Moody. EnviroGolf from Seemingly Pointless. Even the Stars from Paul Clarissou. Fall Man from Glad Game Studios. Haunt the House Terratown from SFB Games. Hookball from Nacho Beard. How to Be a Tree from James Andrews. Induction from Brian Gale. Kingdoms by Space Bears. Kotal from Mark Wannacott. Life on a Mountain from Yukio Kallio. A Light in Chorus from Elliot Johnson and Matthew Warshaw. The Marvelous Mistake from Wonderstruck. Mushroom 11 from Untame. The recently released Reprisal Universe from John Kaplan and Electrolyte Studios. The very, very much a popular sort of homage that came out a week or so back. Rock from Stitch Games. Slider Controllers from Robin Baumgartner. Basically, I don't know whether it's you taking control of controllers in the game or whether it's specifically made controllers with a certain aspect. I'm not entirely sure from the write-up regarding it. Tap Happy Sabotage. Toranesi. Tap Happy Sabotage from Alistair Aitchison. Toranesi from Nick Preston. Virginia from Variable State. And then the unnamed game from TQVBBGH. I don't know what that is, but if it's from what it is, apparently all you need to know is WEUVFV31ES. Apparently, if you spread that around, people will die. Hopefully, somebody will die. If all of a sudden this, if all of a sudden that code is on an ISIS video, that game isn't going to happen and it's going to get destroyed. I'll talk more about it when I might know more about it next week or week after, depending what happens. I am also going to a special screening of the From Bedrooms to Billions documentary, which will be, I think it's coming out in the next week or so in terms of DVD release and Blu-ray and digital download. But certainly, it's the I think it's the premiere. They're also doing, I guess, due to demand, a second screening on the Friday as well. But yeah, I'm certainly going to the first screening on the Thursday, so looking forward to that. Also on the show floor, there will be a stand dedicated solely to Oculus Rift. There's going to be a lot of tournaments run by Gfinity. There's going to be a fight zone focusing on Ultra Street Fighter 4. Minecraft will be there with their Hunger Games mod stuff, as they nearly always are because people like it. Nintendo Life will have Mario Kart 8 competitions. Epic LAN will have a Dota 2 section. There'll be rounds of the Classic Gaming Championships going on there, as well as a whole retro gaming area, which will probably, if it's got Ikaruga on like it's had in previous years, I approve. Various other things going on as well. The developer sessions, relatively interesting list really here. So going down the list, these start at 12 p.m. UK time, which is 7 Eastern. All of which, however, will be available on Twitch for you to see, because obviously most of you won't be there. And will also be archived to youtube.com/EGXTV. Subscribe to that if you want to see them on YouTube instead. But on the Thursday, Isaac Durham Ashdown from Jaeger will present Dead Island 2. Neil Thompson from BioWare will be talking about Dragon Age Inquisition. David Braben will be talking about Elite Dangerous and Death, Stealth, Money and Power in it. Roll7 will be revealing their new project exclusively at on Thursday, as will Creative Assembly with the next Total War project that they've got working. Speaking of Creative Assembly, they're also going to have the guys from Alien Isolation there talking about it. And also Never Alone, the two developers there will be talking about the game. I'm very tempted. At first I was like, I'm not very tempted by that. But after seeing some of the stuff, it's like, wow, that might be good. Friday, there's going to be a live Let's Play with Gav and Ian, who do the Let's Plays on Eurogamer's channel. Tom Clancy, The Division, will be there with Cortez Rodrigo Javier from Massive. Tom Francis will be showing off Heat Signature. Supermassive Games will be there with Until Dawn. Company of Heroes 2, Ardenna Salt, from the guys that used to be at THQ. I can't remember the name of the studio, but Quinn Duffy and Greg Wilson will be there. Rami Ismail from Vlambeer will be showing Nuclear Throne. And then Battlefield Hardline as well, with Steve Papoutis from Visceral. Saturday, we'll have Call of Duty Advanced Warfare with Glenn Schofield from Sledgehammer Games. McNeil and Pamphilon will be going 8-bit with the Comedian's Comedian podcast. Special guest apparently set to be arriving there. Middle-Earth Shadow of Mordor from Bob Roberts from Monolith Productions. Jordan Thomas will be showing off the Magic Circle. Mike Biffle will be there showcasing Volume. Turtle Rock will also be there with Evolve for a developer session, and CD Projekt Red for The Witcher 3 Wild Hunt. Dying Light then will also be there on Sunday with Maciek Binkowski from Techland. Dominic Matthews from Ninja Fury will introduce us to Hellblade. That will be only as part of a developer session. It's not on the show floor that I'm aware of. Lego Batman 3 Beyond Gotham with Arthur Parsons from Traveller Tales. CI Games' Thomas Gopp, showcasing off Lords of the Fallen. Rex Kroll, Michelle Duck, and Media Molecule will be there with Tearaway Unfolded. And then there'll also be a discussion with Dean Hall about the rise of online worlds in gaming. And that's the last developer session of the list. So yeah, there's a lot of good stuff set to be happening, it seems, from that. I'll probably enjoy it. Next week, it depends how I feel after getting back from London as to whether there will be a show next week. I will put a message up on either Twitter or Facebook or both saying whether there will be one or whether I'll delay it by a week, and then I might do two shows then. I'll do a show dedicated solely to EGX and then also a show focusing just on the news and the film reviews and whatever, because I am going to be seeing hopefully a few movies at some point to try and catch up with what I can't see this weekend because of my trip. So with that, that's all for this week. Check out all the other shows here on my network. Unplugged Tuesdays at 9 with Bronxzilla and Jeff Jackson. Unplugged CT should be coming this week as well for your conspiracy theory stuff from the guys. You've also got, podcast-wise, along with Unplugged CT, Running the Ropes will be coming back soon. With Mav, the Elite Force podcast with Walkie and Mindwipe, and apparently myself, except for not for this week, coming. we also have the whole indie show with myself and Sandro and Randy for your indie wrestling. Beyond the Bell with Sean Beckerman for nostalgic stuff. Get in the Zone with Bronxzilla, Anthony, and L Train for TNA and SmackDown. And I think that's everybody mentioned. Let me quickly go through the file stuff that I've got here so I can remember. Yeah, Unplugged CT, we've talked about whole indie show, Elite Force podcast, Get in the Zone, Beyond the Bell, Running the Ropes, Unplugged, Unplugged CT. I think we're good. We are good. So, as my tribute to the farewell to Earl's Court, I will get quite a lot of pictures of the place. I'm probably going to get up early because I'm one of the passes that I'm getting gets me guaranteed access in no matter what. I might get up early one of the days and actually take pictures of the building itself, because, you know, it's an historic building and it's not going to be there again, I believe. Which is a shame, because considering the history of the building, I thought it might have been a listed building, but apparently not. So, wow, that sounded like I was crying. No, it wasn't. It was just because I was getting weird with my breath. I don't know. I wasn't breathing. So, as a tribute from one of the best musical films, certainly from this year, Inside Llewellyn Davis, it's Oscar Isaac and I think it's Marcus Mumford from Mumford & Sons performing Fare Thee Well. As I say Fare Thee Well to you, I will hopefully see you next week, if not in a few weeks, depending on how I feel. I hope you have a good week. I hope I don't come down with a giant sort of convention bug like I have done the previous few years. Oh, joy of joys. Have a good week, everybody, and I'll see you next time. Bye, everyone.
If I had wings, Noah's dove, I'd fly the river to the one I love. Oh, fare thee well, my honey, fare thee well. Well, I had a man, strong and tall. He moved his body like a cannonball. Oh, fare thee well, my honey, fare thee well. I remember one evening in the pouring rain, and in my heart
was an aching pain. Fare thee well, my honey, fare thee well. For my unborn child. Well, fare thee well, my honey, fare thee well. So show us a bird flying high above. Life ain't worth living without the one you honey, fair.